Stephanie F., who owns a HR consulting company, didn't intend to come up with the concept of fake Susan. But when she was talking to a recruiter, a peer, and looking for a role, she came up with this name for just people who are applying who aren't really who they say they are. And he responded, this recruiter said, they actually, internal recruiter, they actually hired for a role. This person was supposed to show up in an engineering role on a Monday and didn't. And the same day or the same week got a call from real Susan, let's call her, and said, hey, I just got a swag box from your company. I did not apply for this job. And it was the fourth time she said that that someone had impersonated her to land a job. And it's just, I think, indicative of this prevalence of people using AI to land jobs. And what that means is a really interesting question and one I want to explore here. I'm Josh Levine, a transformation executive helping private businesses elevate how their teams operate in an AI-driven world. I've spent the last 20 years paying attention to how work actually works, technology, culture, incentives, and the story we tell ourselves about capitalism doing what it's supposed to do. This podcast is me in real time trying to understand how AI is impacting job seekers, job hirers, and people who do the work, and maybe eventually what to do about it. This is the Job Market Shit Show. How fat is Kim Jong-un? How North Korean spies and everyone else are using AI to get jobs. I've talked previously about resumes and the games that people play to beat the AI system. We've talked about prompt injection using white text to plug in exactly what someone's looking for, the keywords, or even instructing the AI that is screening the application to say, hey, this is a great candidate. Of course, AI generated resumes themselves, and also the algorithm that screens it before any human does, right? Which only makes sense given the number of resumes that are coming in. But here's what I've observed is now we're seeing AI being used further and further along in the process. So let me give you an example. In the how AI is creeping into the actual interview now, right? So there's a 2025 article that I found, CNBC article about a Columbia student named Roy Lee, who actually created a subscription service called Interview Coder. And the subject, the tagline is the number one undetectable AI for interviews. And it is meant to give people interviewing for coding jobs the answers to actually pass these tests. Which is really interesting. I think he got in trouble with Columbia, but got a bunch of interviews and ended up starting this company. And now you can subscribe for $60 a month. Another story about how frequently people are using AI in interviews. Another gentleman, also from the same article, who runs a software development studio, hosted a virtual coding challenge for an engineering job, and about 700 people applied. He recorded the process of the first round of the interviews, and he was looking to see if any candidates were cheating in ways that included results from AI. And he observed that more than 50% of them cheated, right? So everybody is cheating. And so much so that now interviews are, the people that are conducting these interviews are like, hey, can you turn off your background? There was one story I read about an interviewer who's had a really dark room, and they're like, hey, can you turn the lights up? We can't see you. And they wouldn't do it. So another one, like, can you spin around for us? Like, because the backgrounds can change, you know, it's like, is this a deep fake? Is like, how are they? Are they proxy candidates is a term that I read. So there's a lot of that going on, but even further, you're starting to see AI being used in the work itself, which of course, when you just say it, is obvious. We're all using AI, but in a way that is less than truthful. There was a story last year, 2025, about a TikTok influencer who worked in, you know, computers was her job. Her name's Christina Chapman. And the story goes that she had been recruited by the North Korean government to apply for and get jobs. And all she had to do was kind of be the rube, although I guess she knew what she was doing. The feds found 90 laptops in her Arizona living room. She was logged in to 300 different companies. She was using VPNs and very sophisticated software to kind of spoof her location, and essentially got paid a fraction of what these jobs actually paid, and ended up $17 million ended up going to North Korea. She tracked and recorded the whole thing on TikTok, which I think is how she was found out. But you know, she went from kind of being destitute to actually being a huge success, quote unquote. And it's really, I don't know. I mean, I don't think this is the common thing. This is pretty extreme, but it is. You can see an escalation pattern happening here. All right. So this leads me to this article from January 2026 in The Economist, and all about how North Korean spies are actually getting jobs in the United States for US companies. They have teams of people working on it. They've learned the language, the interview process. They pass the technical screen, right? So, of course, if we have consumer software that can help us, they certainly do. This whole article is based on an IBM research project that revealed the whole infrastructure. There were recruiters and facilitators and fake identities and timesheets and bids on the hourly work platform Upwork. And you know, they're using things like Google Translate, and they're doing the job. They are actually not just getting the job. And you know, when we talk about fake Susan, this person didn't show up. And I was talking to Stephanie about that job. Like, why would they do that? We couldn't figure it out, because you can't show up on site. But for work that is remote, you can just do it. And these teams of North Koreans are doing these jobs, and it certainly is for the money, but also access. That is very, it's a huge security risk. And the things are, the technology is getting so good when you are, the way that they're, the article goes on to describe how people are asking, are doing these things and asking for folks to, you know, to try to suss out whether these people are real, whether people are real. And it's, you know, it's so good now that they can't just do these regular tricks. And you know, it that the AI tech and the deep fakes or whatever they're using is so good that, and this was amazing, how they figure it out now, that this one company said they always ask, how fat is Kim Jong-un? And I think that is so brilliant, because there's no tricking. Yeah, there's no like way around that question. And they always hang up, right? The interviewee always hangs up. So how are we fighting this? How is the industry fighting this? We've talked about escalating the war, right? Of using AI to apply and using AI to vet. And so now we're beyond just the basics of resumes into the interviews themselves. The interviews, were once supposed to be a vetting of your skill. They were once supposed to be, okay, you passed the first test. It's sort of this elevation, right? Of getting to, hey, who are you? And in technical jobs, we've done now we have coding tests. These are all aspects of the interview process that's supposed to demonstrate, you're supposed to figure out if this person is a good fit, however you describe that. But now we can't do that. And so if we can't as humans do it, what are we doing? So there's some technical solutions that are kind of coming into play here. So keystroke tracking and eye movement monitoring. Apparently, eye movement, so the developer that I referred to before that had that 700 person coding event, he said that basically the easiest thing to do is to tell if they're looking, but looking somewhere else on their screen to get an answer. But now even these applications are saying, are so good that you don't need to look around. And you can kind of see that as a story. And essentially he's, essentially what this developer that runs this development firm says that essentially they're just considering moving to in-person interviews, although that potentially limits the talent pool. And the fact is Google, Cisco, McKinsey, they're all doing face-to-face interviews, which is inherently limiting. I know that that's what we used to do before the pandemic, but that is really, if only if the company has the right kind of money and funding can they bring people out, or only if they're in this person is local. So, the quote problem is now I don't trust results as much. I don't know what else to do other than on-site is what that developer running that startup said. And that makes a ton of sense, but it feels like we're moving backwards. And it doesn't, I don't know, it doesn't, it feels like a regressive solution, whether it's keystroke tracking or come back in person, to a problem that is bigger than that. There's just no technical solution. We're not gonna, this arms race is going too quick. It's building too quickly. These are all just, it's kind of like you call it like surveillance. And it's like, okay, maybe, but it just doesn't feel like the right solution. And as I was thinking about this whole process, as I was thinking about the old way to do this. So the way that we used to, and it still works, the way that we used to prove trust, which is really what we're talking about here, was referrals. And if you lean too hard on referrals, then you get stuck in power structures and reinforcing current dynamics. And I get that. But in my conversations, referrals still work pretty well. And they get you past the first round and maybe even, land you the job. I mean, there's a lot of other parts of the process to get the actual job. But what I think is interesting about referrals is it proves that you are actually somebody who's real. And we can't tell that anymore from any other possible tactic. I don't know what the answer is. Referrals are, in by nature very restrictive. I mean, I think that's why they work. They're not expansive. But I just, and again, I don't have a conclusion, right? I'm just asking questions. What is the way to do this in a way that makes sense that's not regressive? We have worked, we businesses, HR, recruiters have worked so hard to make it easier to sort, to apply, to find new talent that we've basically taken out the key piece, which is trust. We don't have a way to gauge trust anymore. And now it's spiraled out of control. And I think that's what's interesting about this escalating war of AI when we're thinking about getting and even doing work. That we need to see people in person. We need to get personal relationships, the people to essentially say, hey, I believe this person. I know this person. I think they're a good fit. Or even asking, questions that can't be answered. Like, how fat is Kim Jong-un? It can't be answered in good faith, I guess. I mean, that's not scalable. None of these are scalable solutions, but it makes me feel like there has got to be a better way to do this. And what we're doing now is just not working. The Job Market Shit Show is brought to you by me and my company, Great Mondays, a change consultancy helping leaders of private companies elevate how their teams operate in an AI-driven world. You can learn more about me and my work at greatmondays.com. If you are experiencing the shit show and have some stories to tell, hit me up. Send me an email, stories@greatmondays.com. I also love to see if you got a shitty rejection letter or an AI communication of some sort, anything that sort of demonstrates your experience. If you'd rather read or watch the Job Market Shit Show, you can find me on Substack and YouTube. You can search for Josh Levine, Great Mondays, or the Job Market Shit Show. And finally, a little request for me. If you have found this episode interesting and useful, send it along to someone else who might as well. It really helps other people find the show. When you follow and subscribe. Thanks everybody for listening in to the Job Market Shit Show. We'll talk to you next week.